I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for the PGA Championship. And joining me to break it all down, Sia Najad is here. Sia, happy PGA Monday.
Rick, I'm super excited. I did a few lineups and it's major week, right? So every lineup we do, we think it's the best lineup. So I think I'm going to take down every single tournament I enter.
They all look so good on Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. By Thursday morning, it's a little bit of a different story sometimes. But hey, it's fun either way. Greg Ducharme rounds out our team for this afternoon. Greg, good to see you. Let's talk some PGA Championship.
When those lineups... get away from you on Thursday morning. It's like the worst. It's just the worst thing. I mean, it's one thing if like Sunday doesn't go great, but you had the whole week where you're in the mix and you feel like you got a couple of live ones. But when it happens Thursday morning, there's nothing worse. Even if Friday afternoon doesn't go, you at least feel like you got hope for another day. And so I'm hoping that all of these lineups that I've started to look at and I'm putting together that are winners, of course, I hope they actually at least get me to Sunday.
So there are two things that I do that make the Thursday morning sweat very scary sometimes. So not only am I on the West Coast, so I'm 3 hours behind, especially for the East Coast events. By the time I'm up and checking my phone or whatever, there's some guys out on the course. So that's part one. And then part two, Sia, is when I look at the app, I scroll bottom up. I don't go from the top down. Because I want to see, like, right away, am I dead? And when you start, you know, it's Thursday morning, they're five holes in, and you see your guy two or three over par, it's just devastating. I might as well stay in bed.
Rick, you're weird, and so am I, because I do the exact same thing. I scroll from the bottom up. And by the way, if I'm in contention on Sunday, I actually won't check the score. Like, once I know I'm like somewhere near the top 10 or top 20 or top 50 in a single entry, I literally won't check until after. And that's not just for golf. That's for NFL, DFS, you name it. I wait till the end because I don't want to know that I was in first place and a bogey got me, you know, got me down to fifth. I don't want to know. And honestly, like, a lot of times it's kind of a cool feeling to just wake up to the app and all of a sudden you're in second place. It's pretty cool.
You're crazy. Yeah. If you're scrolling up from the bottom, you're just hoping not to see your guys. And then when you get to like even par or whatever, you're like, okay, like if I start seeing my guys now, it's kind of acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I'm not too worried about it. Gentlemen, I must let you know that CBS Sports HQ is your home to start your sports news day with live updates kicking off each morning at 8 a.m. Eastern. And HQ is always your home ahead of the evening's action with live picks from the best analysts and cappers in the sports world each day at 6 p.m. And this week, our crew is locked in on the PGA Championship. Listen to this, boys. Our friends from the First Cut Pod, Kyle Porter, Rick Gaiman, Doug Bell will be on HQ all week with picks, weather reports, highlights, and everything you'd want to know about the tourney. That's me. I'm in there. These guys are the best and the reason I'm loving golf more than ever these days. Obviously, I didn't write this, but it still holds true. So check out HQ on your computer on cbssports.com or via the CBS Sports app on your mobile phone or TV. It's always free and it's always on. Boom. PGA Championship Ocean Course at Kiawa Island. Let's start with the course, Greg. And I'm going to pull up my little course model here on rickrungood.com. That's my website. Everything that you see will be from that site. And let's just start with the length, Greg. Does it matter that this is being marked as the longest course in major championship history, 7,800 yards plus? Also note that in 2012, it had the same distinction of being the longest course at the time. Longest major championship course.
I think it has some effect. It definitely, I think it thins out the field a little bit. It rules some guys out. There are guys that are just going to feel like they can't get it done. But at the same time, Kerry Haig, who sets up golf courses for the PGA of America, is very fair in his setup. So I think you'll see plenty of challenge, but you'll also see a fair challenge where good shots are rewarded. And the thing is about guys on the PGA Tour, whether they have a four iron and it's 230 yards, 240, 250 yards, or they have an eight iron, they have the ability to hit that ball where they're looking. And that's something that we have a hard time comprehending as more recreational style players. And when you play a recreational game, typically the longer the club, the more difficult the shot. Now, that's true on the PGA Tour as well, but the margin is way smaller. The percentages of making a birdie with a five iron for a tour player versus a non-tour player is significant. They have the ability to control that ball just the same. They can hit all the shots with those clubs just the same. So length isn't necessarily the hardest part. Length gets really challenging when you add another variable to it, when you add wind to it, when you add really firm greens, when you add really thick rough or something like that, and another element, all of a sudden length becomes much more penal. So on this course, I expect to see some wind. It looks like we're going to have wind out of the east at least the first 2 days, possibly the first three, and somewhere between 10 and 20 miles an hour in Kiawa Island. Right, the town of Kiawa Island. But when you get right out there on the coast, if you've ever been to the beach, it always seems to be a little bit windier. So I do think it's a big deal, Rick. It's going to be a long day for a lot of players, but I do think the setup will be fair.
Not only a Pete Dye design, but a Pete and Alice Dye design. Those raised fairways will certainly expose players to the wind more often, Sia. So as we try to take what we've learned about this course and translate it into the types of golfers that might find success in it at an event like this, where do we start with that conversation?
Yeah, so I think the natural inclination when you see how 7,876 yards is, oh no, like I need to load up on the guys who have like mega driving distance, who can really smash it. And I think that'll help. And I think it's something that you need to look into. But I also think being accurate is really important because we know on this course, your greens and regulation are going to be enhanced big time if you landed your first shot in the fairway. So I'm going to be focused really on off the tee, but not necessarily as much on driving distance, although that's something to consider. But approach, especially those long proximities that we've kind of focused on over the last few weeks, 175 to 200, 200 plus. And like we spoke about kind of at length on yesterday's short show, I think around the green game is going to come into play too. So give me approach, give me the longer proximities, give me the off the tee game, and give me around the green. And what I really just spelled out for you, Rick, is you kind of have to have the all around game here. So I mean, that's really what I'm looking for. I'm not necessarily looking for guys that are fantastic in one or two components. I'm looking for guys that are good in all components.
Sia just told us that Daniel Berger will be winning this golf tournament. So I think we can end the show right now. Greg, before we move on to the actual plays and jumping into the salaries, I think the thing that we're all going to hear, if you haven't heard it a dozen times already, what you're going to hear is that this is a links-style course. A links-style course. It's going to be the magic words, the keywords all week long. What does that mean, Greg? How does this differ from what we would normally see over here in the States?
Well, one element of a links course is that it's seaside, or at least by near a body of water. And the ocean course, don't let the name give it away, it's seaside.
Spoiler yeah. alert. it's there.
Another other common elements, there's usually not a lot of trees. So the golf course gets very exposed, and wind becomes a major defense on links courses. You tend to see some more rugged areas off of the fairways and greens. greens. Many links courses don't even have irrigation systems. They rely completely on the natural landscape and the rains that the oceans bring to water them. So you may see a course that gets a little more brown in a typical links style golf course. And other kind of common things, I wouldn't say this is necessarily a rule. This may be the difference between this style links course and a British, Scottish or Irish kind of link style course, a European style link style course, is the elevation of the greens and the amount of runoff and the grass type. I think all of those play into effect and what makes it different. So when you see in the short game area, particularly in the Open Championship, you see a lot of guys putting from off the green. You see a lot of mid irons, you know, chipping with a 7-iron or a hybrid or a 5-wood. And you may see that from some pretty extreme distances. You see essentially really, really long putts. Mm-hmm. This golf course to me is a little bit different in that regard. With past Palom grass, it's a little more sticky in most cases. It's a hardy blade of grass, which is designed to withstand that kind of, which really...
I've never heard anyone, a hardy blade of grass is my new favorite term ever.
Yeah. Yes. All right, I'm
That's
sorry.
Amazing.
It means it's thicker, right? It's just a little thicker. Whereas you can steal it. It's yours. Consider it yours. In fact, I got it from you, Rick, and I heard it on HQ. So where rye grass, fescue grass that you normally see overseas is a really thin blade of grass, and it blends really nicely from fairway to green. Sometimes, depending on the conditions, you can barely tell the difference. It's hard to see and differentiate where the green is and where fairway is. But that's not the case here. So it'll be a little stickier and it's harder to hit those low shots running them up. And then the other thing is there's severe elevation changes when it comes to missing greens in certain areas. And that will encourage players to hit the ball up in the air. You'll see more spinning wedge shots here than you'll see in an Open Championship. That's the difference in a links course from this links style course to one overseas.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Greg. It is now time to jump over to the cheat sheet and talk about each one of these pricing tiers. And there's no better place to start than the top. The 10K range offers six golfers, headlined by Rory McIlroy, the most expensive golfer at $11,500, Justin Thomas at $11,300. At 10.9 is Dustin Johnson, John Rahm checking in at 10.5, Bryson DeChambeau at $10,200, and Sia, maybe the hottest player on the planet, Jordan Spieth, $10,100. Now, remember, this pricing came out earlier than normal. So, DraftKings has not had the opportunity or the luxury of seeing the completion of the Byron Nelson. So some of these guys who played last week, you know, maybe could have been priced differently if the salaries came out as normal. What do you see when you look at this 10K range?
I mean, the one that really jumps out at me is Rory McIlroy, which is surprising that I'm even saying that. And I think I'm affected a little bit by some recency bias, but we know that, you know, before that win, he was pretty much coming on pretty strong. I mean, the metrics were measuring out. I think the Steve Cowan factor is kind of a big deal. And I think we might have seen the manifestation of that in Rory's win, but I think he's still on an upward trajectory. So when I look, like, I think in this top range, you have a lot of people that have some issues. You can make plenty of good arguments against, you know, Bryson DeChambeau, for example, and even Jordan Spieth, if we don't think the off the tee game is really fully reined in. So the guy that really jumps out at me is Rory. I just think he's in really good form. Off the tee game checks out. You know, his approach is getting better, and he can get hot with the putter. So I have no issue with Rory this week.
Rory McIlroy, fifth off the tee, 13th tee to green, second in driving distance. I certainly, Greg, am not going to knock anybody for investing their hard-earned dollars into Rory McIlroy. I guess my only concern would be this one win being the only event that he played since the Masters. He goes out and he wins it. I wonder how we would feel if he finished T7 instead of winning this golf tournament. I just wonder if we got to full fever pitch Rory McIlroy being the most expensive golfer too quickly. That's my concern.
Man. Well, when it comes to pricing, that there's a very strong possibility of that. When it comes to playing him, I still think there's a ton of value in it. And I also think, Rick, the value of, we talked about this in our little preview, returning to a major championship. It almost feels like he's the defending champion here. And I think in majors, that's often oversold. It's rare that somebody, you know, wins again at the same venue twice, other than Augusta National, where they play it every year. When you have those layoffs in between, it's rare that they win again at the same venue. So with that being said, I think the way that Rory won at the Wells Fargo is very intriguing. I also think what Rory did back in 2014, it kind of sticks in my mind, where he was coming off of another layoff, and then he got a win and broke a streak at the Open Championship, and then won the Bridgestone, and then won the PGA, and he kind of got on that heater. And Rory is a momentum player, and when he has momentum on his side, he can be really hard to stop. So I think the fact that he won here in 2012 by 8 shots, the fact that he has a history of getting hot and going on runs where he wins, you know, multiple times in a row. This isn't like the normal rule where, hey, the guy that just won, I kind of stay away from him because it's unlikely that I'll do it. Rory can do it again. He's not afraid of that. And then also the improvement in the putting and in the short game makes this very intriguing, because those are the elements that got him across the finish line in 2012, where he was able to make 6 and 8 foot putts all day. And I have more confidence in that than I have probably in the last, at least since 2018, maybe 2017. It may go back even farther than that. So I have a lot of confidence in Rory McIlroy, and I think he could be a really smart play this week.
He gained 6.95 strokes putting in his victory at Quail Hollow just a few weeks ago. It was his third best putting performance in my database, which goes back to the start of 2015. He doesn't need to do nearly that to win or contend on a weekly basis, but certainly would be helpful. See, I'm looking at the rest of this 10K range, and we've got the number one player in the world here. We have our current reigning players champion here. We have Bryson and Spieth, John Rahm. If it's not Rory, who is it?
Yeah, I don't want to take the chance on DJ, just not knowing where his game is at. And frankly, I don't know if this knee is an actual issue or not. I think there's enough unknowns with DJ that I'm probably personally going to be pivoting off of that. Bryson, I'm just really not impressed with, particularly on approach. So I'm not going to be checking that box. So to me, it's probably between, I like Justin, but for me, it's probably between John Rahm and Jordan Spieth. And again, because I want the guy that doesn't necessarily flash in one or two particular metrics, but is, you know, pretty good across the board, I think I have to err in favor of John Rahm, because Jordan, you know, he does have his issues off the tee potentially. I understand that that's coming around, but just last week, I don't think he was great off the tee. So I'll take, even though Rahm hasn't been great, I'll take Rahm there.
How dare you? Okay, let's look at John Rahm, because what he's done is pretty special. You know, often we talk about guys who are constantly gaining strokes off the tee. Well, how good has John Rahm been? He has gained strokes off the tee in every event of this season and every event of last season. That is 28 consecutive. It's crazy. And I'm not talking about gaining like a half a stroke. It's like, oh, let me just go out, gain 4, 5, or 6 on a weekly basis. It's really special stuff. But Greg, Sia mentioned the name that I I know it's the first cut. I know we have this like Spieth thing going on, but it really is special what he's doing. Since the start of 2021, he is significantly the best player on tour. The gap between him and the number two player in terms of strokes gained total is the same gap between players 2 and 10. He's lapping the field. He's getting an opportunity to complete the career Grand Slam. He's doing it in a way that is super sustainable with an excellent approach play. And he has that magic short game that if he just, you know, grabs the magic beans for a couple of holes, he might just win this thing.
He has to sharpen up that short game a little bit. And I think it was really important that he played last week, because he mentioned that he was a little rusty around the greens, and we saw that on a couple, at least two short game shots where he basically flubbed them. for lack of a better term. I mean, they were that bad. And that's not Jordan Spieth. We all know that. But last week was also important to me because it was validation that the stuff he had done from February all the way to Masters was real. It was real work that he and his team have gotten done that is sticking. And that's who Jordan Spieth is now. His golf swing is ingrained to the point where a little bit of time off doesn't end his chances. It doesn't throw him back to square one. He doesn't have to figure things out tee to green anymore. And that is a great breath of fresh air. He, to see his point, he's not an incredibly accurate driver. He can get Aaron off the tee. We all know that. But there's the big miss to the right that was plaguing him that's gone. And it's because he fixed his golf swing. We're seeing that with his iron play. We're seeing that there. So while, yes, this is a really long golf course for Jordan, who's not an overly long hitter, his ability with the iron play, his ability around the greens and the magic that he can have on greens, and I think he's also very comfortable in the wind. I do think Jordan Spieth has a real serious chance. And in the comparison to he and John Rahm, the one thing that I'm noticing with Rahm, who's having maybe his best ball striking year of his career. Off the tee is consistently year to year to year. He's the top five driver of the ball. But if you add in the iron play, it's really his best year in a long time. But the short game seems to have really left him. I mean, in sand saves, in proximity to hole from sand, in scrambling, these are numbers that last year he was inside the top 30, and this year he's outside the top 100 in all three of those categories. So it's a little bit concerning to me. And the putting is also another thing. It's gone from 22nd to, again, outside the top 100. And there's a there's a noticeable time when that changed, and it's with the equipment change. And I just wonder if the new ball that he's playing, the new wedges, a new putter, if it's any of those things that's leading to this lack of performance, or if this is just, hey, he had a baby, there's a lot going on, a lot of life events that also have an effect. But when there's a clear thing, like I changed my equipment and my short game all of a sudden has left me this way, it gives me a little bit of cause for concern. But so that's why I favor Spieth over Rahm. But I mean, Rahm's been so good, it's hard to imagine that he won't contend, at least.
So let me put a bow on a couple of those points there. So I believe Rahm made the switch at the new year when he went to his Callaway stick. So that would have been right here, the Tournament of Champions. Since then, he has not been strong around the green, mostly hovering around zero. He's had a couple of poor weeks. He's had one really good week. But if you start looking back before that switch, he was a routine gainer around the greens, one or two strokes seemingly every single week. So I think that is noteworthy. And then also to the Jordan Spieth comment about his driver, while hitting fairways is certainly different than gaining strokes off the tee, they are certainly not the same. He has tightened up the driver. He's gained in seven of his last eight starts. And the one that he lost, he finished fourth at the API. He was essentially a zero. And in his 12 starts before that, he was horrendous. So obviously something, I think that's nice to say, something has switched for Spieth a bit. Okay. That's the 10K range. Let's jump on down to the 9K range here, Sia. We have our defending champion, Colin Morikawa. Xander Schauffele's here, a giant question mark at 9,500, named Brooks Koepka, Hideki, Victor Hovland, Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed, and the other Patrick, Patrick Cantlay, round out this crew.
Okay, first of all, I want to change my answer. I like Jordan Spieth better than John Rahm. Now that I heard you and Greg talk about him, I legitimately I might have to give Jordan the nod there. So I don't normally concede like that, at least not that quickly.
Listen, now it feels like you're a real member of the First Cut podcast.
Yes, you've just been hazed.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys.
Welcome to the team. Special.
Appreciate that. So this 9K range is really interesting to me because there wasn't a guy that necessarily like really jumped out at me. I mean, obviously Hovland jumps out to everybody. He's going to be super high on everybody's model. The finishing positions have been great, but honestly, the strokes gain metrics have been really great too. So I totally get Victor Hovland. I think in tournament contests, actually might be fading him. He might be more of a cash play for me because I do think his popularity is going to be super high. It's a clever pivot or an easy pivot in my opinion, because you do have guys that I like as well. For example, Xander Schauffele. I think Xander, it does trouble me a little bit that lately, if you go past 24, 36 rounds, his off the tee game, you know, I know we talk about him like he's added length off the tee, but his off the tee game really doesn't grade out that great, but everything else does check out for Xander Schauffele, from the short game to the long irons. It's not like he's terrible off the tee, but I would have expected that number to be a little bit higher. But with that said, I think I like Xander the best here. And if I was going a second best, I mean, that's kind of tough for me because I don't love anybody, but it would probably be Victor Hovland and Webb Simpson.
Hovland is certainly going to get the thing you're going to hear about Hovland all week long is that his two wins have come on past Palom, the Puerto Rico Open in Mayakoba. You're going to hear that a bunch of times throughout the week. He's shaping up early in the week to be one of the most popular golfers on the slate. Greg, I'm trying to figure out if we didn't want Victor Hovland, who else in this range could be interesting? And I've got two that I think might do the trick, but where would you head in this range?
Well, I just want to real quickly point out Xander Schauffele's record in major championships is absolutely ridiculous. Okay. I mean, this guy has played in 15 majors. He's made 14 cuts. He has 8 top 10s and 6 top 5s. So, I mean, that is ridiculous. His performance in majors, he always contends. So, Sia, I'm totally with you there. Xander is my guy in this range. The other guy that I think is really interesting and I think a guy worth looking at, especially if the conditions get tough, if the wind blows as much as I think. I think the forecast is a little lower for wind than I expected, but I think it'll be higher than what's projected, if that makes any sense. So the guy that I'm looking at is Patrick Reed. And Patrick Reed has that ball flight that's kind of he can be sneaky long. He can get it out there beyond what his statistical driving distance is. And he too is just a gamer. He's simply a gamer. And so when it gets tough and you got to grit your teeth and grind, I think Patrick Reed is a guy that's going to be right there. In the short game models, if you combine around the green and putting, he's going to sit right there near the top, depending on how you filter it. And I think he has a top 2 short game on this board. And I think he is also probably a top 2 putter on this board. So
who are the others?
For short game, I would say Jordan Spieth, and for putting, I would probably say
Danny
McCarthy. I'd probably say Jordan Spieth. That's a little harder one to do off the top of my head, but probably Jordan.
I just thought you had someone else in mind, but I agree with you. The short game is magic, and if you ever want if you were ever green short-sided in a major championship and you had to hit a shot and get up and down for par to win, like I would probably just pick Patrick Reed to take that spot.
Yeah, I mean, one of those two guys. There's a lot of great short games out there on tour, but these guys are so impressive. And the other thing with Reed is he likes to use a lob wedge. So when you get overseas, it may not be advantageous, but when he gets well below the surface of the greens, he has the ability to hit shots with some crazy spin on it. And he has great control. And so I really like him for that reason. And I think it's a little bit of a lower ball flight, which should be really helpful in the wind. So I would say Xander and Reed in this range are definitely my top 2.
All right, let me pick your brain about our current Masters champion, because I was certainly not on Hideki last week. I thought there were too many unknowns. I didn't know what to expect. He finished 39th. That is a happy fade for me. But see, I was impressed. I have to admit this. You know, he finished 39th, but he was excellent off the tee. He had his best off the tee week since Sony. That was at the beginning of the year. He was great on approach. He was fine putting. He gained a stroke putting, and he had by far his worst around the green week ever. He lost 4.5 strokes around the green, nearly twice of what his previous worst was. So I'm thinking, okay, well, if Hideki can plug the leak with the one thing that he's generally been pretty good at, this might be a pretty decent spot for him.
Yeah, I love the analysis there, because I'll tell you, I wasn't on Hideki at all last week, and he impressed me too. Obviously, that the ARG is concerning, but I mean, you look at the tournaments right before that. I mean, clearly he can really kind of go off around the green too. I mean, he has those moments, and the fact that the off the tee and approach game look that good, coming off what I perceive to be, you know, kind of a big break from the Masters, I thought there was going to be some fall off there. Yes, it did present itself around the green, but I think he's a really clever play. I mean, I don't think people are really fully bought into Hideki. So when you look at guys like Hovland and let's say a Morikawa, some of these guys that are going to be really popular, I think Hideki is a very sneaky ownership leverage play.
Let's talk about Morikawa, because Greg, we've, you know, gone through a lot of this 9K range and we haven't spent an ounce of oxygen on our defending champion. He's 9,800. He is appearing to start to round into form, an 18th place finish at the Masters, a 7th at RBC Heritage. And then, of course, he missed the cut with Matthew Wolff at the Zurich, which I think we can just throw out the window. So what is our sentiment around our defending champion this week?
With Morikawa this week, I feel like he's a player where the length will really affect him. And part of the reason for that is where his strengths lie. He is really strong in hitting fairways. I don't think that's going to be, it's going to be important to hit the fairways. I don't think you can spray it out there, but I don't think a guy who hits a lot of fairways is going to develop a great advantage over some of the longer hitters. So I don't think that advantage is huge for him. And I think his strongest asset is his iron play, which I don't think that is proven, right? It is.
Yeah.
And when you have a golf course that's this long, that advantage can get kind of reduced. You start to miss more greens. You just have longer clubs in. And I know what I was saying at the top of the show, how you can handle these long irons just fine. So the length isn't a huge deal. When you're comparing somebody hitting a 5-iron and somebody else in your group hitting a 7-iron, it becomes a really big difference, especially when that iron you're hitting in is your strength. And that's what you're relying on to make birdies and relying on to avoid bogeys. And that's what Morikawa does. And I feel like he's going to have a tougher time this week approaching the green. And then I'm not overly confident in his short game and putting. So I feel like this is going to be a lot of golf course for Colin Morikawa this week.
All right, last thing before we move down to the 8K range, because we've got a two-time winner, our 19 and our 18 champ, who is sitting at 9,500. We can be quick here. See, what the heck are we doing with Brooks Koepka?
It's a no for me. And it's not like I hate where his game is, but there's a lot of unknown still. And just like the guys we talked, I'd rather, let's put it this way. Normally, all things being equal, no injury, decent form, I'd take Brooks Koepka over Hideki Matsuyama pretty much 100% of the time. But right here, right now, it seems to me like Hideki's the better play. And Hideki's not even my favorite play in this range. So when I size up Xander Schauffele, when I size up Victor Hovland, maybe a Patrick Reed, who I might be convinced with, thanks to Greg. And then Hideki, Brooks Koepka comes so far down that line that I just don't think I can get there.
All right, Greg, Brooks Koepka, your thoughts?
Please. It's hard to find a home for him in this range. But at the same time, I do think you could put a flyer on him. He's earned it so many times in the past where he hasn't been necessarily in great form. He shot 3 under and he missed a cut by 3. So it's not like it was awful. He lost a little bit with his irons. He usually doesn't do that. He lost a lot putting last week, which is probably the biggest concern. I think he can iron out the iron play, no pun intended. But I don't know. I mean, I'm mainly negative on Koepka. But I think his pedigree, his history, what he's proven to be able to do, the switch he's been able to flip, I think it's got to give him at least a look. You got to ask the question.
I am going to bet him at 55-1 and not worry about anything else, because
yeah, I think that's a smart play, Rick.
I just think his win equity remains high. His missed cut equity also remains high. Yeah. I don't want to deal with all the finishing positions in between. Okay, gentlemen, here's what we're going to do. We are going to bop on down to the $8,000 range. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The rest is football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
And we're back. $8,000 range on DraftKings, led off by Cam Smith. We have Will Zalatoris. We've already said Daniel Berger is going to win this golf tournament. Goes all the way down to Tyrrell Hatton, Louis Oosthuizen, and Justin Rose. So, Sia, let's start with you. Your targets in the 8K range.
Well, spoiler alert, it's impossible for Daniel Berger to win if Siwoo Kim is going to win. So maybe second place for Daniel Berger, but we'll get there. Listen, I love Daniel Berger. Statistically, he's just rating out so well across the board. I mean, if you look at recent form, maybe last 24 rounds or so, around the green game is a little spotty. But outside of that, I mean, the long irons there, off the tee, the approach is there. I really like Daniel Berger. I think he's a really smart play. I think this is like what I would kind of characterize as good chalk, because he absolutely will be chalk. This is an interesting range, though, because there's not a lot of guys I really like. I mean, obviously, people like Will Zalatoris, and that makes sense. Cam Smith is really interesting to me because if you look at the metrics, pretty much every time he shouldn't really be high on your list. But somehow, especially in these type of fields, he really ends up doing really, really well. So if I'm going to look for maybe another 8K guy that's going to also give me some ownership leverage, I think Tyrrell Hatton all the way down that $8,000 range is interesting, because again, I continue to think that Hatton has upside that really hasn't been seen or achieved this year. And I think at this price at 8K, he could really make a splash in your lineups, an affordable one.
Let me illustrate some of the points that Sia just made. I mean, Cam Smith, three consecutive top 10 finishes, including the victory at the Zurich Classic. He seems to pop up no matter how difficult the course or the field is. And then Daniel Berger, you know, we were joking earlier about Berger being completely well-rounded, but it's true. He was absolutely phenomenal again last week at the Byron Nelson. And what I love most about Daniel Berger is that he doesn't need to do much with the putter to contend. Last week, he finished third. He gained two strokes. When he won at Pebble Beach, he gained 2.5 strokes on the greens. This is a far cry from a lot of guys on the PGA Tour who you have to gain 5 or 6 strokes putting or do something incredibly special to hoist the trophy. Daniel Berger doesn't really have to do that because his baselines are so good in most categories. Greg, let's move this over to you for your plays out of the $8,000 range, please.
Love Cam Smith, so I don't think we have to spend too much time on him. And I have a question for you guys about Berger before we go too much farther here, because I look at his results. I look at venues where he plays really well, venues where he's won: Pebble Beach, Colonial. He's played well at Harbortown. He's played really well. He's played well at TPC Boston. He's played well at some of these courses that the Honda Classic. I consider them to be on the shorter side. And I don't see a lot of great Daniel Berger results. TPC Southwind, you can't forget that, 7,200 yards. I don't find a lot of great tournaments from Berger on big golf courses, on long golf courses. So I don't know. I haven't put too much attention into it, but that's my biggest concern with him. Is this golf course going to be a little bit much for him? It's a little bit away from the typical Daniel Berger course where he has success. So you have any thoughts on that?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess my response there is the long iron game is really, really supreme for Daniel Berger. If you look at the last 24 rounds, 200 plus yards, he's third in the field. 175 to 200, he's 16th. You're just not going to find anybody better than that. So I agree with the sentiment, and it does scare me. And it's kind of part of the reason I'm still kind of flaky on whether or not I'm going to play a guy like Webb Simpson, for example. But with that said, I just think Berger measures out so well in all of the categories that he can afford to be a little weak in that driving distance category.
I think he's been bitten a couple times at maybe some longer courses. I mean, I kind of look at, I mean, he's got a ninth place finish at the Players. Last year at Harding Park, he finished 13th. I don't know. I think it is a valid concern, Greg. I think it's valid. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
All right. At least it's valid. So anyway, moving on in this range, there's a guy that I am looking at, and I just have a feeling that it's going to be a solid week for him, and it's Justin Rose. He's back with Sean Foley now, and he did miss the cut at Valspar. It did not go very well, and it honestly hasn't gone very well for quite some time, with the exception of the Masters. But Justin Rose has kind of become this different player, a completely different player who did contend here last time when Rory won in 2012. So he was definitely a part of the story, but he is such a, he's become a grinder, and largely because his ball striking has really left him. But I wonder if a Justin Rose this week is going to figure something out with the golf swing. I like that he's working with Sean Foley again. And I think that may have a real positive effect for him. And you know, he comes to play when it comes time for major championship. So he's really interesting to me. And Louis Oosthuizen is another guy. When I run short game models, when I look at major championship success, I Louis Oosthuizen always pops up. And at 8,000 flat, I just think he's a great play. He was eighth at Valspar, 26th at the Masters. He was sixth at the Workday at Concession, 11th at Waste Management. I mean, his results this year are just fantastic. And he's doing it, even though he's got one of my favorite golf swings to watch on tour, he's doing it a lot with the short game, the putting and the around the green play. This year, it's just been at a whole new level for him. So I look for Louis to have a nice week.
I much prefer Louis to Justin Rose this week. Louis doesn't play often, but when he does, he seems to play well. He's coming off of not only that runner-up finish with Charles Schwartzel at the Zurich, but the eighth place finish at Valspar. He does it in a way where the short game is kind of his specialty. So I certainly do not mind old Louis Oosthuizen. And looking at the rest of this range, Sia, before we move on, do we need to say anything about Scheffler, Finau, Fitzpatrick, Sungjae, Fleetwood, any of those guys?
I think Scheffler is a pretty solid play. Fitzpatrick is just a confusing one to me. I don't know what to do with him. I obviously was pretty high on him last week. And it's one thing for the narrative to be, well, he only plays well on the hard courses. But for him to have played that poorly on a, quote, easy course, I mean, obviously it was an easy course. But I don't think I can come around to Fitzpatrick. But it certainly makes sense for Fitzpatrick to have a bounce back at a course like this relative to what we saw just a few days ago. But again, super discouraging how poorly he played.
I completely agree. I was very discouraged by it, and it makes me just want to get back in this week and see what happens. So we'll see.
I got one little caveat to that. Sure. Sometimes when he played, the last time he played before that was April at the RBC Heritage. So he took about a month off, and sometimes those two rounds can just shake off a little bit. It can just shake off a little bit of rust. And I wonder if something happened where he said, I forgot I was doing that. And so all of a sudden he comes back. There's one thing that he cleans up, and he's back to the Matt Fitzpatrick we saw before in April, in March, during that time frame. So I think Fitzpatrick's still interesting, and I wouldn't put too much on the performance last week.
Fair. Okay, you don't need to twist my arm, Greg. Fine.
Yeah. All right, Fitzpatrick, we're on him.
Just end the show right now. $7,000 range. This is where things really start to get interesting. This is where I believe that the soft pricing, Sia, that we usually see in major championships, I think this is where it starts to rear its ugly head. We have legitimate high upside golfers here, guys, that are going to be incredibly popular, and it's a huge range. So I'll let you start on who these guys might be, who were fading, and who were willing to eat the chalk on. But I have a feeling this is going to be a very popular range of golfers.
Super popular. This is where everybody's going to get most of their savings so that they can load up in the 9K, 10K, maybe 11K range with Rory. I like Anser quite a bit. I mean, the finishing positions you see right there are pretty spectacular for a guy whose name is Abraham Anser. But aside from that, you know, tee to green, he's been great. If you look at the last 50 rounds, he's been really good tee to green. He is 28th in this field. But if you just look at the last 12 rounds, he's seventh. So he is really kind of like, his game is coming on. And for a course like this, you know, again, I'm sort of defaulting to a guy that's sort of good at everything. But what that really means is, what that really translates to, at least in most part, is good ball strikers. And Anser is absolutely a great ball striker. So I like him quite a bit. Going down a little ways, I think Paul Casey's a really smart play. I mean, I think this is kind of an obvious one. People are going to see Paul Casey popping in their models. He's a great play at that price. Going down a little bit, I think Charlie Hoffman and Keegan Bradley. I mean, these guys are kind of like obvious plays. Again, these guys are going to be chalky. We're going to have to see who really merits more of the ownership percentage. But Charlie Hoffman and Keegan Bradley have been striking it really well. We know Keegan has won a major before. We know he's going to be comfortable here. He's contended here before. And again, Charlie Hoffman, he's just striking the ball really well. He'll be good in the wind. And lastly, I got to mention two guys, because I mentioned who's going to win this tournament. It's obviously going to be Siwoo Kim. Siwoo Kim, I'm saying that with a bit of sarcasm if you can't see my face on YouTube. But Siwoo Kim, tee to green, he's been really good. Last 50 rounds, 15th. Last 12 rounds, 18th. So he's in that top 20 class. He's striking the ball really well. He's obviously good on Pete Dye, so that helps a little bit too. And I just think the price on him is really, really low. I think it's probably a misprice to some degree. I could see him easily being 76, 7,700. And then Jason Kokrak is my last guy in this range that I like. I'll mention Griot because I always like Griot, but Kokrak is a guy that if you look at his metrics, he is really, really striking the ball well. He should kind of tear up the par fives to the extent they are, quote, tear upable. So I think Kokrak is a smart play at a good price.
Of the okay, so let me also note that Siwoo Kim noted Pete Dye specialist, if you want to throw that out there as well. What I've done here on rickrungood.com is I've looked at every single golfer in this field from the start of January 1st, 2021, so the start of this year. And shockingly, of the top 10 players, 1, 2, 3, 4, half of them come from this $7,000 range. Charlie Hoffman is third. Corey Connors is fifth. Paul Casey's on the list. Chris Kirk is on the list. Brian Harman is on the list. All of them have been better than Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, Joaquin Neiman. Now you can argue they're playing different course, different fields, the caliber, all that good stuff. But Greg, some of these names, Hoffman's been awesome. Corey Connors is literally the best ball striker. I'm not even kidding. Strokes gained off the tee versus and plus strokes gained approach. Corey Connors has been the best in 2021. There are just a lot of names here that I think are going to free up a lot of salary, and they're certainly worth your investment, or at least your consideration for investment.
Yes. And again, I go to a guy that you brought up earlier. This depends a little bit on what you think the real fingerprint is. I tend to be leaning a little more towards short game. I think short game and putting this week are going to be really important. I do think distance is important as well. But I kind of feel like approach game is going to be less important than some of the models say. I think it's going to be a little less important than it was, say, last week. So the guy that I go to is Brian Harman in this range, who's been playing great.
Yeah.
And he is, he was tied 18th at the Wells Fargo, tied 13th at RBC Heritage, tied 12th at Masters. And then before that, fifth in the match play, tied third at the Players. He's been on this run for quite some time of really solid play. He's comfortable in this area of the country. He's from the Southeast. He went to school at Georgia. He is a Bulldog. And I think that style of play is going to be really advantageous for him. He's good at getting the ball in play, but he doesn't rely on, like, this is the difference between he and a Morikawa. Brian Harman doesn't necessarily rely on the iron play to score. He relies more on the putting to score. He relies more on short game to score than Morikawa. So the length, in a way, of it doesn't affect him as much. It doesn't rob him of his strength quite as much. And I'm not comparing these two players in terms of their career. I just think I don't want to say, hey, I'm staying away from Morikawa because the course is too long, but I'm going to pick Brian Harman when there's a Corey Connors available. I'm not. There's a reason for that, is my only point. So I really like Brian Harman in this range.
I do as well. So I look at what he did at the Wells Fargo Championship, where he finished 18th, as you mentioned, Greg, but he lost nearly 8 strokes on approach. Now you can look at that and say, wow, a guy who loses 8 strokes on approach, he should just miss the cut. He should finish dead last. There's no way he should finish inside the top 20. And you realize that was his third worst, essentially, approach week since the start of 2015. And you say, okay, that's probably not going to happen again. And then you look at the short game. And if you believe short game is going to be important this week, then you must look at Brian Harman. And a lot of people, you know, rightfully so, are like, oh, Brian Harman's too short off the tee, whatever. He's gaining a ton of strokes off the tee, whether it is with accuracy, however you want to do it. He is gaining a ton of strokes, or at least he is positive every single week. So I agree with you. And Greg, I'm not a big Harman guy, and I can certainly find a way to get to him this week.
And there's another, if you think back to another really long major championship venue, Aaron Hills, for the U.S. Open in 2016, he was the 54-hole leader. So a long golf course doesn't necessarily mean long hitters will win. We saw that here in 2012. We've seen it in all major championships on long golf courses, although long hitters may end up winning, it's not like the entire leaderboard is just filled with bombers. Bethpage Black may be the exception to that, where it was really, really long hitters with the exception of Spieth. So I think Harman has a real chance.
And Rick, I just want to add one other thing in, because, you know, part of the reason I mentioned Emiliano Grillo as more of an afterthought than kind of one of my main guys is because his, I do believe the around the green is going to be important here, like Greg said. And his around the green game lately, kind of always, it's just not good. I think Corey Connors also fits into that category. Yes, he's ball striking is great, but if you believe in the around the green narrative in terms of that being really important, Connors might have some serious issues. And then I did mention Tyrrell Hatton. That's another guy who checks out pretty much everywhere, but around the green he doesn't. So it's kind of a little bit of a leap of faith and a price play for me there, but I did want to point that out.
And Sia, let me stay here with you on this one. Sam Burns at 7,500. This is the biggest discrepancy with the salaries coming out early, where we did not know what he was going to do with the Byron Nelson. He darn near won it again, which would have been back-to-back wins for him. So Sam Burns' last three starts, fourth at the Zurich. That was with Billy Horschel. He wins the Valspar. Then he has the 54-hole lead and finishes runner-up at the Byron Nelson. He's $7,500. He will be incredibly popular. Is this good chalk or is this bad chalk?
Well, my rule now is that, especially if the guy's 7,500, because that's what Doug Gim was last week, I can't buy into the 7K chalk. So if he is going to be as popular as I expect him to be, there's pretty much no way I'm playing him, because I see it'd be one thing if this 7K range wasn't rich with what I believe to be like pretty high-end talent. But because it is, I think there's plenty of room to pivot off Sam Burns. So, you know, while I might like him in a cash game, for example, because that's a really great price and he can pile up the points for you in a GPP, in a tournament play, I don't think I'm going to get there with Burns if the ownership is what we expect it to be.
Okay, fair enough. Greg, anybody else in the 7K range, or should we move on to...
What do you guys think of Robert McIntyre this week? I'm thinking a European guy. I think he has a lot of upside. He's got some distance for sure. He's at 7,000 flat. I feel like there may be a little value there. I think he may be a little underpriced.
He's good. And I think that a lot of these, so the 6K range is a lot of European players. And I think that he kind of headlines a lot of those golfers for being able to understand the conditions a little bit better. We've seen him contend when he comes over here, right? He had that deep run to match play, he played well at the Masters. He made the cut at RBC Heritage. He is, I think, much better than most people want to give him credit for.
Yeah. And you may get a little ownership, leverage play, as Sia would say on that. So I think he's a guy worth looking at.
Agreed. All right. $6,000 range here. And as I mentioned, Sia, I think there's a mix of, I don't know how they do this. Like there's kind of like veteran guys. You've got Ryan Palmer, Stuart Sink, Charles Schwartzel, Phil Mickelson. And then you get like basically all of their Euro guys. And there's a couple that I think are certainly noteworthy. So how are we parsing through what is the largest range of golfers and the cheapest range of golfers on DraftKings?
Yeah, this is kind of cool, because the 6K range is finally rich with players. I mean, obviously it's a major, that's what we expect, but the last couple of weeks the 6K range has kind of been one to avoid. I mean, I like a lot of guys at the top here. I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys know I like Ryan Palmer. I played him last week.
Yeah.
and he's at a price where, okay, now it's like super acceptable. Like, you didn't want to play him at 9,100 last week, and I played him anyway, but I totally understand that sentiment. But here at 6,900, again, there's plenty of upside here with Ryan Palmer. Stuart Sink, another guy, certainly he's not going to mind the long course here. You know, he's hammering it off the tee. I think, you know, the way he's been finishing tournaments, I think, is fantastic. I expect him to make the cut. And then another guy, this is probably the guy I was sort of heaviest on. I know, Rick, you and I had an outright ticket on him, Charles Schwartzel. I mean, I think the perception, at least what I'm hearing, is, hey, you know, Charles only been good for, you know, a couple tournaments. It's not true. We actually talked about Charles 2 weeks ago and how his form was coming on. So, I mean, you can't deny like what you see here from a pure finishing position standpoint, but the numbers check out too. And I think at 6,800, he's likely to be a little bit popular, because he's certainly making headlines nowadays. But I think Charles Schwartzel is a very smart value play.
Runner up at the Zurich, 21st at the Valspar, 14th at the Wells Fargo, 3rd at the Byron Nelson. Schwartzel's results in his last four. And then, oh, by the way, a T26 at the Masters in the start before that. Greg, we've got One of the guys on the short list to be player of the year, Stuart Sink, with two victories, is $6,900. Brendan Todd, who was the last man to win two events in a row. Sam Burns tried to pull that one off. Anybody that I can tickle your fancy with down here?
I'll go down a little bit deeper on the board here. There are two guys that I really like, one more than another. I would say Alex Noren. If you were to take a guy at 6,600 and you were to say, okay, he's going to finish tied 21st, would you be happy about that?
Yes.
Yes.
Alex Noren in his last...
Sign me up for it right now.
Right. Alex Noren in his last three starts has finished tied 21st. AT&T Byron Nelson tied 21st. Valspar tied 21st. Zurich tied 21st. And the RBC Heritage before that, it was tied 25th. So I don't think he's going to be the player that that you win with. But if you take a risk on a Brooks Koepka or you do something along those lines, Alex Noren is a safe, is kind of a safe, low priced option who may allow you to take a little bit more risk up at the top. I know you guys tend to go a little more risky in the 6K range and a little, and not quite as safe down here. But I really think Alex Noren, with these four straight solid finishes on the PGA Tour, I think he's finding something. And I think this could be a good golf course for him with the conditions expected to play the way they are.
I think that's fair. And he's played much better and he kind of can lean on that short game at times. I certainly don't mind Noren this week. See, let me run a couple of Euros by you. I think the lowest I'm comfortable going is right here. Dean Burmeester, he's a South African. His last three starts, he's won, he's finished fourth, and he's finished sixth. Those are the last 3 weeks. And if you look at the event that he won, it essentially... you know, strength of field wise equates to winning a Puerto Rico Open or a Corrales Punta Cana. Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. Greg, there you go. it equates to that in terms of strength of field. So I want to get your thoughts on that, if that matters at all. And then also, we didn't mention him in the $7,000 range. Garrick Higgo's up there. He just won recently as well. Both of these guys can move it a bit off the tee. Dean Burmeester's like never finished outside the top 10 in driving distance. How do we try to snag some of these guys who are coming over, compare maybe their international results to things that we can tangibly look at on the PGA Tour?
It's a great question, but I think if I had to default to something from a European player, I would probably want a little bit more experience and maybe some contention, which is why, by the way, I hadn't gone down to the 6,300 range when I made my lineup. So that's something I'll need to kind of dive into with respect to Burmeester. But you know, guys like Dylan Fratelli, Tom Lewis, like Dylan Fratelli in particular, like his stats are not going to pop to you. He's going to be like, you'll be scrolling for a while looking at your model. But that's a guy that with a little bit of experience that I feel like is somebody, if I'm going to pay really low for somebody, I think that's probably as low as I'm willing to go.
Okay, fair enough. Greg, as we kind of start to put a bow on this, Phil Mickelson is sitting here at $6,700. Are we interested at all?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Is there anybody else? I mean, Maverick McNeely.
Yeah, so I'll answer the question as low as I'm comfortable going. All right, so I have a guy at $6,500, and I'm... Yeah, 6,500. Beneath this player, I haven't found anybody that I really feel good about. I mean, I'd really be guessing because, quite frankly, we haven't seen a lot of them. I haven't really followed a lot of these players, and that's part of the reason why they're down there. So the guy that I'd be comfortable going with is Mackenzie Hughes. He tends to be a guy who performs really well on difficult golf courses, and he's performed well on some long golf courses as well. So he's not going to, kind of like Fratelli here, he's not going to pop up in any of your models and you're going to say, oh, Mackenzie Hughes is going to be a great play this week. But this is just a course fit that I think we're, you know, a scoring level that I think can work for him for a grinder like a Mackenzie Hughes. But again, he has been a popper in his career. He still is. He hasn't popped of late. But that's kind of the essence of picking these kind of players. So a little bit different than Alex Noren, who I feel like is kind of a safe play. Mackenzie Hughes would be a risky play. And I think he could really surprise you and contend and win you a tournament. I also think he could give you a case of the Thursday morning blues. I don't know when his tee time is, but he could give you the Thursday morning blues too.
Real quick, Rick, I believe there's a guy that fits the Rick Gaiman algorithm by the name of Lonto Griffin. And for the record, he rates out pretty well in my model. So just wanted to throw out that out there. Are you going to play him?
Yeah. So the model is a flow chart. Is Lonto Griffin over $7,000? If yes, you don't play him. If he is under $7,000, you fire him up. He's $6,600 here. You know, this is interesting because he had a stretch of golf from the Masters through the Valspar, where he missed three straight cuts. It wasn't very good. He played much better at the Wells Fargo. So he's coming off a T26 there. And you can see some of his results previously with a 35th at the Players, a top 25 at the API, and another top 25 at the WGC event before that. And what I think is interesting about Lonto is he's one of the few guys, not that he's excellent at either, but his skill sets are approach and putting. And approach and putting, it's like if those are your two weapons and you get hot, it's super dangerous. You can start throwing darts. You can start rolling things in. It's not that he's bad in the other categories, but those are his strengths. So, Sia, he certainly perked my ears up when I scrolled down and I saw that name, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. I might have to dust off the old flow chart if he's back to making cuts.
I'm in.
He is long enough, which I think is really helpful. So he could do it. The one thing that just sticks out in my mind, and I'm having a hard time getting past it, because my philosophy this week is so short game heavy, I'm just picturing him behind the green at the WGC match play.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm having nightmares. And look, I love Lonto too. I buy into the flow chart. I'm a big supporter of Lonto on and off the golf course. And I want to play him. I think he could do really well, but I'm having nightmares. So I don't think I can.
What you forgot about that was he was only that terrible, flubbed shot he hit behind the green was only because he flew the green from like 30 yards in front of it on the top of the ball. It was like a terrible sequence of events.
Yeah, the thin on the first one and then the chunk on the next one. That's like going out on the first hole and slicing it into the woods and then duck hooking it into the water on number two.
In spite of the missed cuts, I do believe he's a little bit better around the green than he has been. Like if we isolate the last maybe 12, 24 rounds, I think
it's
a little
bit
better at least.
Yeah, I can't get worse.
That's fair.
All right, gentlemen. Either way, it is going to be an absolute blast. All the big boys certainly trending in the right direction as we head to Kiawa. But this will not be the end of content for the week. There's plenty more coming. Our mega preview pod on Tuesday, as always, round by round breakdowns, maybe a special episode. Who knows? Keep an eye out on our Twitter feeds for all that good stuff. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. Let me thank Greg Ducharme, who you can find on Twitter at TheRealGFD. And let me thank Sia Najad, who you can find at Sia Najad. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.